Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today on the show, me and my guests are going to be talking about burnout because she's an expert in it. And we're going to talk about ways to identify it and ways to get out of it. So sit.
I want to believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Carol Jean Whittington. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Hey, thanks for having me, Reid. I'm excited to be here having a conversation around all things burnout today.
Oh, that's great. So why don't you start off by telling me a little bit about yourself?
Gosh, that's a really big open-ended question, Reid. I'm autistic and ADHD, so we could go anywhere with that question.
So true.
Let's see. I just turned 50 this month. We're recording in the month of May, and I am celebrating. I am excited about turning 50 this year because I never thought I'd make it this far. I never thought I'd be alive. Because my very first burnout started at the age of 6, and as with many people in our neurotype, suicidal ideation is a really big part of that burnout experience, and we don't always correlate the two. We don't always understand, and it's a lot of times other people don't understand. It's not necessarily wanting to take the action, but it's I need to hit pause. I need all the demands to stop. I just need some room to breathe and just not have anyone expect anything of me because I have been depleted of all my resources. And for me, that began at the age of 6. And I am also a burnout researcher. And over the last 3.5 years, I have done a global spicy burnout research study. And in that research, when we do the section that is our burnout history, what we are finding in the data and what has emerged is that a majority of autistic people, be it late identified, early identified, it didn't make a difference. The on-ramp to burnout begins around age 4 to 6, and then from age 6 to 8 is usually when the first burnout experience happens. We even had respondents say that they recall certain burnout stressors, those warning signs that I teach, those internal warning signs, beginning as early as age 3. They vividly remember them. And for me, it began at 6, and it continued for almost 40 years. I learned I was ADHD in my mid-20s, and that made some sense. It answered some of the questions, but not all of them. And I'm also a trifecta patient, so I have very common co-occurring health conditions that happen within the autistic population. So I have mitral valve prolapse, I have POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. I also have hypermobility. I don't have EDS, Ehlers-Danlos, but I do have a variety of the syndrome. So I have hypermobility. And then I also have mast cell activation syndrome. And all of these things together, this really impacted my energy, not knowing my neurotype, not, of course, decades also of, oh, the test came back normal. We're not sure what's wrong with you. We don't know why you're hurting or why you're, having these problems. And all of those things just kept compounding. And so I stayed on this chronic cycle of burnout for almost 40 years. And I discovered and learned that I was autistic when my son and I went to a neuropsychologist and we were going for him. We'd been on this journey for like 5 years trying to figure out why he was struggling. And I was like, this is so similar. I really recognize this. I had a similar experience. So let's just see what we can do because nobody ever figured anything out for me. And the neuropsychologist looks at me and says, you were missed. And in my very black and white, very literal brain, I went, no, I wasn't. No one missed me. I'm right
That's
here.
fine. I
And he just
mean,
kind of looked at me and smiled and nodded his head he kept talking, was giving me all the information about my son and his diagnosis, and this is what he needs, and this is what would help. And I went about 10, maybe 15 minutes into the conversation. I'm not sure because I have time blindness, but it popped up, and I was like, well, hang on, wait a minute. Are you saying I'm autistic? And he looked at me and he said, you really should make an appointment on your way out and come back and see me. And I was like, okay.
I mean, that is
And at that
interesting
point,
because,
it was it was such a huge
Mm-hmm.
shift because I
Yeah.
had never even considered that for myself.
That is interesting because a lot of people I've talked to who've been late diagnosed with children, they'll go for their kids and the therapist will look at them and go, and they'll look at their kids and they'll go, I identify with a lot of what he has. And the therapist will just look at them and go, you know, that could be telling you that you're autistic as well. Have you been diagnosed? And it's just like this eye opener, like, wow, this explains a lot of why I am the way I am.
It really does. And for me, and a lot of what I talk about in relationship to how I help people navigate out of burnout. So I am in year four plus of living burnout, shutdown, and meltdown free for the first time since I was 6 years old.
Good for you.
And this has been a tremendous experience because I've gotten to places that I didn't even know existed or that were possible. I had no idea that this place, this thriving, passion-filled life where I have sustainable energy and I have tools. I mean, yes, stuff still happens in my life. Yes, I still have stressors. That did not go away. Yes, there are days that I have lower energy than others, but I'm not in burnout. And that has been a very different experience because at an early age, I was identified as having an exceptionally high IQ. So I have an IQ of 138. And so I would hear these things all the time from adults and people around me. Gosh, Carol Jean, you're so smart. Why would you do that? That didn't make sense to me. Or, gosh, that was really dumb. That wasn't a very good thing to do. Why did you do that? You seem like you're way smarter. Or, gosh, that really hard thing has seemed so easy for you. Why can't you do this other thing that it's like no big deal? And, spiky profiles. So, my identity up to that point, when that darling little neuropsychologist in his little half glasses and his sport coat and his salt and pepper hair said, you were missed, and it really finally set in, I thought I had just been this failing adult. I thought I was just not smart enough. I had to work harder because maybe I just wasn't as smart as people thought I was. And then there was this place that I was just like, okay, so not only am I like failing as a person, then I felt like I was failing as an adult. I wasn't succeeding as a mom. I was failing as a wife, all of these things. I'd had all these different careers because I would dive in and I would excel and I would do really, really well. And then I would burn out so hard that I would go from like high speed 900 miles an hour to like a dead standstill. And I was absolutely incapable of even getting out of bed.
Wow.
And those things are part of the experience that I don't think get talked about nearly enough. And the way that we then feel about ourselves, our worthiness, who we believe ourselves to be. So when I got that, my son got his diagnosis, and then he's invited me to come back to get my own, I went, everything that I'm learning about myself, now that I know I'm not just autistic, but I'm also ADHD and all these things kind of tie together. And then it's this unveiling process, right? You get this one little drop in the bucket, but then I also discovered, oh, I also have dyscalculia, which explains why math was so stinking hard for me. I can understand some areas of math, but not all areas. It was really
That's
a
me.
challenge. That I have dyspraxia, that I have an auditory processing delay, but I'm an auditory processor. It's all of these things. And I have alexithymia. So none of this came in that big bundle of, here's your diagnosis and here's all the things. I mean, I got a few of those little parts and pieces, but it really is this unveiling process. But we also go through this processing phase because it's this massive identity crisis when you're late identified and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm not broken. I'm not defective. I'm not just a massive screw up and failure. There's a reason. And then we learn about burnout, and then we learn about masking, and we start to scratch the surface on those two things. But we go through this grieving process. We go through this identity crisis in those early days, in those early months, and sometimes those early years. And it's, God, what would have been different in my life if I had known this sooner? How did people miss this? So then you're like heartbroken and you're grieving and then you're angry. How did people miss this? It's so obvious. I was born in the 70s. They just weren't looking for this. It didn't line up with the diagnostic criteria. It still doesn't, but hey, we're working on that. And all of this through this chronic exhaustion because we are so undernourished, we are malnourished in the world because the things that and how we experience and process the world, we don't recognize it. We don't trust it anymore because, when we're little, we recognize these things. We say, oh God, that hurts me. Or, we're crying and we're expressing something that we want or something we really enjoy. And the world responded to us as, that was over the top. That was too much. It can't possibly hurt that bad. Why are you crying? That person didn't say anything. It couldn't have hurt your feelings that bad. Suck it up, buttercup. Let's go. You're not bleeding. And so it's like, oh, I must be wrong. And then we don't trust our own feelings and experiences. And then it becomes this place where we're in this like chronic survival mode, trying to field all of the potential places where we're wrong in the world, when ultimately we've been right all along.
Problem is, people look at us and think we're different, but the thing is, we're not. We're as smart as everyone else. We just see the world in a different view.
Well, I would argue with that, and I would say we are different and we see things differently. And we're different in the best ways, and we're different because we're supposed to be. Our neurotype has existed since humanity existed, and we are here for a reason.
I wish we could put glasses on people and make them see how we see the world, and then they'd
Wouldn't it be
understand.
amazing? Because it's like 4D Technicolor, like high res when we see the world, right?
I mean, we see the world in black and white, but everyone else sees it in three different colors. We only see black and white, yes and no, true and false, fast and slow. We don't see that middle road. So people don't understand why our logic thinking is so different than theirs. It's just we only see logic. We don't see that middle ground.
Well, what's interesting, I mean, you mentioned that, and that is very true for a lot of us within our community. However, there's another side of that. There's another side of us that we see the black and the white, but we also see this massively infinite array of colors. And so then we're in information overload and we're trying to funnel down to the essence just to operate. So it's like we can get overwhelmed by the data that we do perceive because we see things other people don't. So there really is, when you talk about a spectrum of experiences, there are areas in my life that I only see a black and white. It is very literal for me. There's not a lot of gray. And then there are other areas where it is just this infinite volume of technicolor. And then it's like information overload.
So when you got your diagnosis, did everything start to make sense to you? Like, oh, this explains why I did X, Y, and Z, and why people look at me like this. Not because I'm goofy.
That's so funny because so many people have that experience. I did it just different, like everything else I did in my life. I was like, okay, this is nice. This makes sense. And I processed a little bit of it. I'm like, okay, now I know. And I went, well, if I was missed, and I know how much I struggled, I know how hard life has been for me, and I don't want my child to have the same struggle. So I poured myself into everything that I thought would be best for him. Fortunately, we had this very wise neuropsychologist that diagnosed him, that gave us resources, and it did not include ABA therapy. Thank the Lord. So we did occupational therapy, we did integrated listening system, we did vision therapy. I mean, we did all this stuff, the IEPs, we did everything. And it took about 2 years for us to really get him to where things were going in the right direction. And at that point, I had pushed myself so hard, and I had a second child who's ADHD. And at that point, I hit probably one of the worst burnouts of my life. And in that moment, I thought, I think it's time I figure out what being autistic means for me right now. And it was in that place where I said, I want to be the best version of me that I can be, and I've got to figure out what being autistic and ADHD means for me so that I can be the best version of me.
So being autistic yourself, it must make it easier now for you to understand and help your son because you both experience autism, you both have the traits, so you're able to relate with him and to him about
To a
why.
certain degree, I mean, he just turned 21, and it's just like with any other human. I mean, we can relate to a certain extent, but we each have our own experience. So for me, it's just a lot of listening. It's a lot of learning. It's a lot of compassionate curiosity, you know, like, hey, share with me how you experience this. This is how I experience it. And sometimes it's similar, sometimes it's wildly different. But we have some pretty interesting conversations.
Now, how did you get yourself out of your loop of burnout?
How did I get off the chronic cycle burnout loop? Massive disruption and incredible self-love for the first time. Because I hated myself for decades. I thought I was unworthy. I thought I was failing. I did not love me. I didn't even want to be here, right? And that's why turning 50 is such a big deal. But it took that dark night of the soul. It took, you know, laying face down on a hardwood floor because I was so burned out. My body had physically shut down and was quitting. And I couldn't even raise a hand to feed myself most days. I couldn't stand up. And I slid out of my bed, and my two children were asleep. My mom had come over and helped put them to bed. And, you know, my husband at the time was overseas fighting in a war. And I laid face down and I just sobbed. And it was that sobbing that is so deep that you don't make any noise and your body just sort of shakes and you run out of the tears and you're just there. And I remember thinking, either I'm going to be here in the morning or I'm not. I had reached that point. And there was just this little glimmer of hope. There was this little ray of light that came in. Because when I asked myself, what do you really want? And I'd never asked myself that question. I had asked what everyone else in the world wanted. I'd never really asked, what do I want? What do I need? And I thought, I want to be here for my children. I want to be here for me. And I didn't know how to do that. I had no idea, but it was just that hope in that one moment of, I want to be here for me. I want to be here for them. And it was in that one moment that shifted everything. And I began to say, okay, I'm going to start looking at things. I don't know what questions to ask, so I'm going to go out and find some. And I started with this, you know, I think I Google searched like how to get to know yourself journal prompts. And I just started with that. And it was just this really small step, you know, this one question a day or a week, you know, however I was going to do it. Getting to figure out who I was, discovering myself for the first time. And that's scary as heck. That is terrifying. But it is also fun and very empowering. I stepped into and reclaimed my personal power for the first time in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my very first time I had burnout. I was away at college, and every day I'd wake up and I'd feel exhausted. and I didn't know why. My eyes were all watery. I felt like I was half asleep, working on fumes, and every Friday night I would crash, wake up refreshed, and then the cycle would start over Saturday. And then it would just keep repeating, and I didn't know what was happening. I'd just wake up feeling, I'd think to myself, I just got to get through this day no matter what. And I thought, I didn't know what it was. I thought maybe it was sinuses or maybe it was something else until I realized it was burnout. I was ex mentally exhausted trying to get through each day away from home, dealing with college life, making a whole new start. And it was just this repeated cycle until after I graduated, it was just like, what the hell was that? And why did I have to deal with it all the time?
Oh yeah. And there can be these places like college was really hard for me. I had to withdraw two separate semesters because the burnout was so bad. But there were places in my life, especially when I got into my 30s, when things really amped up, when you have the career and a partner and children, and I thought I was losing my mind at one point. I was terrified. I was scared to death. I thought I was losing my mind. I thought I was going crazy. And I had these two little kids, and I was like, I can't tell anybody this. I can't tell anybody what's going on because something, they'll lock me up because I feel like I am losing my mind.
Now, how did you decide on the pepper for the quiz?
Oh, it's just fun, right? It's just fun. Because I mean, think about burnout. I'm like, I can't remember. I was having a conversation with one of my friends just a long time ago, and I was like, I just feel like I feel like my energy and like I'm just burnt up. Like I'm so burnt up. I feel like I bit one of those super hot peppers, and it like that just stuck with me. And of course, I was playing, and I was like, I love marketing and I love branding stuff. So I was like, what would be a really fun way to do this? I'm like, you hear people talk about spicy neurotypes. I'm like, no, we got spicy burnout. And I'm like, then I look at the Scoville scale, and I was like, oh, the peppers. This is perfect. This so aligns with everything. So I mean, why not? When I talk about the areas of depletion in my research, number four, we have there's top five, but number four is play. Playfulness, just having fun is an area that we feel like we're being depleted in. It's not being nourished enough. And so I'm like, okay, we got into burnout because things were heavy, they were hard, they didn't feel good, it was painful, it was uncomfortable. We're gonna get out of burnout by doing the opposite. We're gonna have some fun, we're gonna play, it's gonna be a little lighter. We can choose things with ease. We can either choose to make something easy or hard. And I say, let's make it playful and easy.
I think a lot of people don't realize it that burnout leads right into depression. And I remember right after my father had passed away, I slumped down into a deep depression. I didn't know what it was. And one day I decided to Google what I was feeling. Lack of emotion, lack of joy of doing the things you used to do. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't be like this. My dad wouldn't want me to be like this. He would want me to enjoy life, to be there for my mother when she needed me. So I just said to myself, I gotta snap out of this. Otherwise, it's gonna turn into burnout, and then I'm gonna get to the point where I can't get out of bed. So I forcefully said, I can't be like this. And I just started getting back into the things I enjoyed doing. And on occasion, yeah, I will slump down into a little bit of depression, and then I'll just fight my way back up before it turns into burnout where I just don't want to wake up anymore.
Yeah. And feelings of depression and elevated anxiety, feeling those anxious feelings in your body, those are actually some of the top 20 internal warning signs. And when we look at burnout, this happens quite often, especially if someone has not yet been identified or if they're late identified and maybe they're seeing a practitioner who isn't very well versed in our neurotype, then burnout is often misidentified as anxiety or depression. they are components of, they're the internal warning signs of burnout. And there's a difference. And really, the only way to pick apart depression that is correlated with burnout versus just a generalized depression that might be, chemically related is to begin to restore. If you identify as being in burnout, if you go through the spicy pepper quiz, I've got a quiz out there. You can go find out, hey, am I in burnout or not? It'll tell you, no, you're not in burnout. You're doing great. Here's some tools to help make it, even better. Or, hey, you fall within a one or all the way up to a five, a level one poblano pepper. It's just a little bit of heat all the way up to that ghost pepper level five, where you're so hot you're not, and your body really starts to break down and show it. What's really interesting is that I've done this, and I have had many, many clients who have come through the unveiling method who are a ghost pepper level five. Their degree of heat in their spicy pepper level is a 10 out of 10. They're a high degree of heat, and they're working a full-time job. A lot of them are also parents, maybe have partners and, fur babies. And what's really interesting is that I find, and it tends to be more women than men, and I think there's a lot of social conditioning here that comes that leads to this, but they're operating in that zone and they're pushing through. And they push through to the point, and we even do like some history of their burnout. This isn't usually the first time. If they're in their 30s or 40s, 50s, and I have some clients in their 80s. What's really interesting is that they keep pushing because it's what feels safe. And it's a lot of I should and I can't. I can't not do this. I should do this. I have to do this. And at the expense of everything else. And it is like this powerhouse resiliency that is not serving us. It's killing us. And it's really interesting because, a body at rest stays at rest, a body in motion stays in motion. If you're also ADHD, we know about those inertia things that happen, right? And I call it, I get the freezies. And all of this, it's like when we're in that burnout so deep, sometimes we don't have a way to articulate it. So in my burnout inventory, I look at over eight different impact areas of burnout, including your sensory system, communication, executive function, cognitive load. In Mashlock's burnout inventory, which is considered the gold standard for burnout, they only look at three main areas of impact. And that does not serve us, especially for neurodistinct. I don't say divergent, I say distinct. Neurodistinct and disabled people, especially if you have co-occurring health conditions. And those things, until you start to move out of burnout, you can't recognize that this was a depressive feelings, experiences associated with burnout itself versus just a generalized depression. So there is some unpacking and there is some things that you have to pick through. And anxiety amps up when we're in burnout for a lot of us. We can do two things simultaneously, which is just the beautiful part of our neurotype. It's like we can have this ultra sensitivity to something, and it's like this heightened awareness. Now, 100% of research respondents in my spicy pepper research report that one of their sensory areas is heightened, 100%, every person.
I can tell you
And
with
what's
me,
interesting,
yeah, with me, it's hair. I have a heightened sense of hearing and a heightened sense of smell. So I can be somewhere where the smell is so intoxicating, I just want to throw up. Or.
Now, if you also are have MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome, then smells are already a big part that you may struggle with. Like it may automatically trigger a migraine or, anaphylaxis or respiratory issues or all kinds of stuff. And then if you're also in burnout, then that can exacerbate and it becomes even harder for you, becomes even more heightened in that sensory area. But we can also at the same time, so like I can put on my headset, totally jam out really loud to my favorite song because it's the one that's on repeat and I've listened to it like 20 times today, right? But at the same time, the bubbles of the fish tank in the room next to me
Would drive you
make
nuts.
my teeth hurt. It's painful, right? So we can experience these two things that seem very different at the same time. And in burnout, that can become an even bigger distinction or awareness that we can have.
What's funny is you mentioned you use neurodistinct. You're the second person I know that uses that term. I talked
Ah,
to
well, it was coined by my good friend Tim
him.
Goldstein of the
I talked to
NeuroCloud.
him. He was a client of
I
mine.
love
That's the
Tim.
my him was a great. He is such a wonderful man. And I
I
know
love
you had him.
Tim.
I love him. I mean, we were supposed to do a catch up, but I was busy at the time. I got to email him back and say, hey, let's get together. But Tim, yeah, he coined that term. And every person I talk to, I'm like, how do you feel about the term neurodistinct over neurodivergent? And 90% of the people like it, and some of the people will pick it apart and say, eh.
Look, it's like everything else.
But like Tim
We
says,
can
it's
all
like, how
choose
you,
how we, whatever vernacular we want to use, you know. And Tim and I actually did an episode on my podcast, Beyond Chronic Burnout, around the linguistics, around the terminology, you know. That's part of, like, how do I describe myself? You know, who am I
But
and how do I want to talk about it?
what's interesting is he told me the woman that coined the term neurodivergent wasn't neurodivergent herself. She was just somebody that came up with the term.
I don't
But he was an interest. He was interesting. I mean, just to learn about him and how he had to raise his tone, the level of his voice, change the octave so he sounded more professional and was able to command a little bit more respect with his family, and how it everything just changed the flow of everything with his family.
Relationships are, you know, a really big area, especially when we talk about burnout, because when we're in burnout, we get to this place. It's like, I don't want to go do the things that I love to do. Like, I just don't have it in me. Or we're trying to force ourselves because you like, I love that. I want to do that. So you go do it, and then you get there and you're miserable the whole time. And you come home, and then it feels even worse because the thing that you used to enjoy, you can't even enjoy it anymore. And it's in that place that, you know, we have to really start looking at. What does burnout mean for me? We have to really be able to identify it, which is why I developed the quiz and the five different levels of burnout. And you said you took the quiz, so tell me
Yeah, I
about your
did.
experience. You
And
wanted to
we,
talk about this.
yeah, I did take the quiz, and I was a level two, and
Jalapeno.
jalapeno, and it kind of opened my eyes and made me realize that maybe I'm still in burnout in some ways with my life, because I do have trouble sleeping, and I do have mood swings here and there, and everything else. And I try to get out of it. I mean, I try to keep myself productive and not drop down into the bottom where I have to crawl my way out. But it was an interesting experience just to learn a little bit more about myself.
Well, good. Well, you know, and that's one of the things that I teach in the unveiling method, and there's four phases, and it's called FIRM. So it's foundation, integration, restoration, and recharge, and then there's mastery, maintenance. And in phase three, I teach the seven forms of restoration and recharging other than sleep, but we also do a deep dive into sleep because as neurodistinct humans, we also have a different physiology. So it's not just that our brains operate in a different way, our bodies also operate in a different way as well, in a unique way. And sleep is one of the most impacted areas during burnout. It's usually the first place to get impacted, and it's usually the last place to really resolve. So when we look at rest, you know, we have to understand what is sleep? What are the different cycles of sleep, what happens, you know, in that 60 to 90 minute cycle, and then we have 4 to 5 of these every night. What happens, you know, when we're in burnout, it's disrupted and our cortisol levels are disrupted. So it's not that we're just not even sleeping, not sleeping well, or we fall asleep, we can't stay asleep, or we can't get to sleep and we finally fall asleep, or we sleep 10 or 12 hours and we wake up and we're still exhausted. And you just can't function or get yourself going in the morning. We're also looking at how is that also impacting us in our waking hours, and especially when we can't wake up and really get going. It may take 3, 4 hours for some folks. So we have to talk about those different elements. And I love that you were learning more about your experience. And I talk about the restoration illusion trap. And you just mentioned that. You probably got caught in it. It happens to a lot of us. I was caught in it for a long time. And that is Let's just say that you didn't know you were in burnout, but in retrospect, we'll look at it and we'll say, okay, I was at a cayenne pepper level 3 burnout. Like that had become my norm. I'd been at that level for so long that this had become my usual, right? My normal experience. This was the new set point. And maybe it's been years. Maybe it's been, long enough you don't remember what it really felt like to feel good. Maybe you're like me and you're like, I think I was 5. I remember, a time, but I was so little. But you've been at that chronic level for so long that that's just your set point. That's your norm. And as life does, things change. And so we might have some new stress that comes in. And that new stress is then using the energy and the attention that we have. And so we may fall and slip into a deeper burnout. So now we might be at a habanero level 4. And we're there for just a little while. And it's contrast from that 3 that we'd been in for so long. So when we move into those deeper levels of burnout, maybe even go to a 5, maybe even gets really, really bad. And usually the only thought we have is, this feels awful, and I just want to feel better. I just want to feel better. And so, as life does, some things change, maybe intentionally or unintentionally. And so, your stress decreases. Maybe something happens and you're getting nourished in the areas that mean the most to you. Maybe it's your emotional safety, maybe it's authenticity, maybe, but something's working, right? So, you start to feel better. And because all you could remember is what it felt like to be at a 3, and that feels so much better than a 4 or a 5 burnout level, that you think when you move back down the scale that you're out of burnout. When really you're just back at that 3, and you still have a little more ways to go. You still have a whole lot more to feel better.
When someone's in burnout and they don't know it, what are the signs for them to look for? I mean, what should they look for besides depression? What are some of the major signs?
So I have the top 20 warning signs that you may be experiencing burnout. There's a lot of different things. So I think first we have to preface this with we experience burnout, and burnout shows up in two different places. We have internal and external. Where most people finally identify, hey, I think I'm in burnout, is through those internal warning signs. And so I talk about those top 20 warning signs, and I'll go over a couple of those in just a second. But that's the second place burnout actually shows up, but it's the first place we recognize it. The first place that it shows up, burnout, shows up in our external environment. So that's our signposts. So in the unveiling method, I teach people to start to recognize their external signposts because that's where burnout's going to show up first. And if we can catch it there, we can stop it from showing up internally because by the time we feel it's too late. You're already in it. You're already experiencing the warning signs of burnout, right? So some of the top areas that have been reported in my research, so I'll go over like the top 3 that were like 100% of people said this. A loss of skills or ability. So something you were once able to do, you were either struggling to do it has decreased, or you just can't do it. It's just, there is just something going on. You just cannot seem to do the things you used to do. Number 2, brain fog. And I talk about brain fog and maintaining focus because they seem closely related, but they're different. So brain fog is where you feel like you're maybe walking in sand, your brain feels like it's in this fog. You know something, but you just can't quite get it. You feel like you're just walking through, like you can't quite wake up, right? You can't get all the pistons firing, right? Brain fog.
That's funny
Then there's
because
maintain. Go ahead.
when I was in college, I was sitting down with a colleague of mine, a classmate, and he was trying to teach me stuff. And he was explaining it in my mind, I understood it. But when it came time to doing it, I couldn't grasp how to do it. And now that you're explaining that, that explains where I was in that situation. I was in brain fog. I understood it to the point where I understood it, but I couldn't relate to it to write it down and understand it myself. Like my mind clicked and said, "Oh
Yeah.
yeah, but how do I do it?"
Well, that actually speaks more to the executive function that gets impacted during burnout. So it's, how do I go from point A to point D, and what are the points in between? What are the steps to get there? So if you're also autistic and ADHD, executive function can already be impacted in your norm, but in burnout, it exacerbates. It's kind of like time blindness. So when I have time blindness, and I didn't realize that I experienced time blindness, that's why I'm hypervigilant about time, because I'm gonna be late because I get into the zone, and or you get focused, right? And so when we're talking about this, that's another element that gets impacted in burnout. And when we're talking about neurodistinct and people who are disabled, it's what is your norm? And sometimes we're not even sure. We don't even know. We don't have a reference point, but we pick this through as time goes on in restoration. But what do I normally struggle with, and how is it elevated or exacerbated during burnout? Because it usually is. So one of the other areas, when we talk about maintaining focus, so brain fog, can't you know it's there, but you can't quite get the info. Then maintaining focus is like, I can sit down and I just go into the zone. I go into a flow state naturally. That's the beautiful thing about autistic folks. We go into a flow state naturally. We do not have to do all that stuff that neurodominant folks gotta do to get themselves in a quote unquote flow state. They gotta work at it. We just usually slip into it. But that gets impacted during burnout. So we might be able to sit down and focus and like do the thing that we do, and we're not disrupting. You may catch yourself an hour and a half later and like, oh God, I haven't gone to the bathroom, or I haven't had anything to eat, or I've been sitting here for 2 hours.
Done that.
Right? I mean, I have some, I'm sure we've got at least one person on the other side of this conversation nodding their head, Reed.
Yep. I
Because
mean,
we
I've been
are, you
there.
and
I'll
I
be
are.
sitting there on my computer, and it'll be 2 hours later, and I'll start getting hungry, and I'll be like, oh crap, I didn't eat anything. And I'll go
Right.
upstairs, and my mom would be like, are you okay? I'm like, I haven't eaten anything. She's like, why haven't you? And I'm like, I don't know. I just didn't think about it.
Exactly. So when it comes to maintaining focus, it's like what outside of your norm? So if you can sit down and you can focus for a couple of hours on something, it's no big deal. And then all of a sudden you're noticing, maybe I can focus for 30 minutes or an hour. And then it's like, I used to be able to do it an hour and a half, 2 hours, no big deal, but the time's decreasing, right? Or your focus is diminishing. The other thing is, from the physiological side of things, your body can feel very heavy. You can feel very achy. That's one of the biggest things that people's like, oh man, just like overall, my body just feels heavy. I just feel really achy all over. And so those are some of the biggest things that usually come up when we're talking about some of those internal warning signs, and of course, some GI issues.
What are some of the signs, or what are some of the things people can do to get out of burnout? What is the first thing you'd recommend?
Recognizing if you're in it, number one, because a lot my research shows that we have a tremendous amount of blind spots. We will say that it is a million other things. We'll say, oh, I didn't sleep well last night. And we will come up with a million reasons why we're feeling the way we feel. And we'll correlate it to 10 different things. But there's really a pattern. And we have failed to stop and assign the real root cause that it's burn, what we're experiencing is burnout. So number one, you need to identify if it's burnout or not. Number two, and you can do all of this in the quiz in 3 minutes or less over on whittingtonwellbeing.com. So the second thing is to know, well, if I'm in burnout, to what degree am I in burnout? What am I experiencing? Because when you know which spicy pepper level you're experiencing, we then go to step three, which is, well, it's actually step two. One, take the quiz. Two, get your degree of heat. So if you're in burnout, and let's say you're a cayenne pepper level three, the next step in the unveiling method is we identify what your degree of heat is within that cayenne pepper level three. Because the degree of heat does two things for you. It lets you know, okay, am I mild? So if I'm a level three and I'm a mild degree of heat, then with a few of the right tools and adjustments, I can move down into a jalapeno level two. So I can decrease my burnout. If I'm moderate, I'm slap dab in the middle, then I know without any changes, I could either stay here or I can move deeper into burnout, or with some tools and some of the right things and understanding, then I can start to move down the scale. If you are in a high degree of heat and a cayenne pepper level 3, then this is going to let you know, am I closer to moving deeper into burnout pretty easily? So could I move into that habanero pepper level 4 where my executive function is really getting more impacted and other people are then starting to notice it, right? Because there's these wonderful things that I define each pepper level with, so you know what the impact area is, and sleep and all these good parts and communication and sensory. So if I know that I'm a high degree cayenne pepper, then I know, okay, this is how it's impacting me. These are the areas that I should pay attention to. And then in step 3, we look at what is your number one nourishment key? There are 30 basic human needs, and most of us can name 5 or 6 of them: food, water, shelter, clothing, financial security, those kind of stuff. But through my research over the last 3.5 years, those are not the things that are actually depleting our energy the most. So out of that physiological list, the things that have to do with our body, other than water, I tell people, don't worry about trying to do that, because that's where people most want to often go first, because it's concrete. I can control my exercise and my healthy eating and water. I'm like, no. Other than water, let's look at where your energy's really being impacted.
I bet you one of
And
them is
we,
mental health.
well, there's mental health in a lot of different aspects. So number 3 on the biggest energy depleters is authenticity, not feeling like I'm my authentic self. And for a lot of us who mask, you know, that's a that I mask to the professional level of camouflaging. It's one of the biggest contributing factors to chronic burnout. When we look at and we start to align authenticity and we start to nourish that part of us, but it's not just authenticity. We actually go deeper and we look at what element of authenticity is most important for you. And when we start to look at what's misaligned and we start to align it with some success enablers, and we start one thing at a time, because it's amazing. It's this fulcrum, it's this domino effect. When we can choose where's the biggest area of energy depletion for you, we nail that number one nourishment key, and then we put a success enabler with it so that we're aligning it, we're nourishing it. And we're doing it in this really simple, fun, playful, easy, light way. It is amazing the energy that starts to come in, because then we're not just pouring out, we're actually having energy come back in. And universal law of reciprocity applies here. We have to look at what is harmonizing. We're harmonizing, and we have to have a relationship with our energy.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, is your sensory rest toolkit, is that part of the whole getting out of burnout?
It's just an element. Sensory rest is just one of 8 sensory areas, right? So there are so many things that we don't think about in our sensory system. And the sensory toolkit goes into those 8 different areas. So we look at the 5 basics most people know, you know, sight, sound, touch, taste, smell. But then we also have vestibular. What is my balance? We have proprioception. How do I know where my body is in relation to the rest of me? And then the 8th sense is thought. And this is something that has been part of Eastern culture for over 3,000 years, that they actually consider one of our senses thought. And when I learned that and started to really think about it, when it applies to burnout, it's tremendous. Think about read. I love this. Think about this is so meta. Think about the energy that goes into your volume and amount of thoughts every day. How much energy is consumed through your thoughts? And how does that impact your physical body? So we do have to consider that. So that's just one element. You know, there's so much more. And I created the unveiling method. It is this beautiful, very holistic and harmonizing approach to unveiling who you are, unmasking your values, identifying yourself, because some of the biggest questions we have in late identified life and in burnout, especially if it's been chronic burnout, is, well, who the heck am I? I've peeled off a couple of these masks, I've gotten down a couple layers, and now I don't really know. So we go through that process, because authenticity is number 3, right? And what it means for you Because this isn't about what it means to me. This is about what it means to you, each individual person. So we identify what is authenticity for you so that we can align that, so that we can be in integrity with that for ourselves.
Well,
number two is belonging, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the second largest energy depleter. Not just how do I feel like I belong to other people or with a group of people that get me, but do I belong to myself? Do I feel like I belong here with me in this body, here in this world? And number one is emotional safety. And not so, you know, same case, external and internal. Externally, I have other people that I can express my true emotions to, and I feel emotionally safe to share my feelings, thoughts, and ideas, right? So also mental, relational. But it's also in the biggest energy depleter for most of us in the neurodistinct population and disabled population is I feel safe to feel my own feelings in my body. I can allow space for me to have whatever feeling or thought I have, and it's okay. And for a lot of us, we have these really big, huge emotions that can show up, and it can feel really unsafe. We can feel like, I don't know what that means, or I've been told for so long that that's wrong that I don't trust it. And so that one of those big keys, like when we look at what is emotional safety for you, then we drill down a little further, and a lot of times it's trust. I don't trust my own feelings and thoughts. I don't trust myself because the world told me I can't,
okay,
or I shouldn't, right?
Now you have a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell, how did it get started?
Beyond Chronic Burnout in its first iteration started as Mind Your Autistic Brain. It began because I was having these amazing conversations with some incredible humans, and I wanted to share a wide variety of burnout experiences. Because I only have one experience, and that's mine. And I knew to be of the best and highest service to other people experiencing burnout, because there's so many blind spots around recognizing that we're in burnout, I wanted to have conversations and have other people share their experience and their zone of genius and expertise and whatever that field might be that could be of service. Because, you know, I always say, and I share this on my show, I talk about this all the time, I always say, I might not be your favorite flavor of jam. You might love seedless raspberry, and I'm strawberry with seeds. But if you can hang around and you stick with me a little bit, I'm gonna introduce you to your person. I'm gonna introduce you to your flavor of jam, because I believe very strongly, when we talk about that belongingness, right? I believe very strongly that one of the most powerful things that we have that energize us is when we find at least that one person that we know gets us, that we know understands our experience, and we can shorthand some conversation and we're not having to over-explain it all the time about everything. We've got one person that heart to heart, we know we belong, they get us. And if I'm not that person, I want to introduce you to that person. I think that's important.
Now let's talk about your book. You've written a book.
Mm-hmm.
What's,
yeah.
What is it about, and what's it, and what can people get from it?
So Unleashing Sustainable Energy is all around how it lays out the unveiling method, the methodology that I created. It goes through the biggest mistakes, you know, the mistakes that I made, the mistakes that I've had my clients come that we've uncovered that was their biggest mistakes trying to get out of burnout or even identify burnout. And we talk about the full map of the unveiling method. We talk about energy, you know, and if you know, you guys are listening and you just want to start the conversation, you're just not even sure where to begin, go check out Beyond Chronic Burnout podcast. And I have the 9-day energy up level, and it's all about energy and your relationship with energy. What is energy? What is thriving and living your passions and dreams? What is this? And what are some of the biggest blocks or barriers that come up that we may not recognize? So I talk about all of that in the book. I tell you exactly what the unveiling method is, what the steps are, you know, what each element is, from foundations to integration to restoration and recharging, and what that management, you know, mastery looks like. Because this is all about energy mastery.
And finally, where can people find out more about the quiz, your book, and yourself?
Everything can be found on WhittingtonWellbeing.com.
And that's it, everybody. I'm Reed Miles, and that was Carol Jean Whittington. And I'll see you in the next one. See you there, everyone.
Just one.